Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Gracie King, recording live inside Julie B. Ellen's Sensitive Empowerment Community, which is a positive alternative to traditional social media for sensitive people. So if you're not already here with us, you can learn more and join us at sensitivecommunity.com. Today's topic is sensitivity, and we have with us here Jen Graneman, who is the co-author of the book Sensitive, which was published earlier this year. Jen is also an educator and a journalist who authored another book, The Secret Lives of Introverts, and she also founded Introvert Dear, which is the largest community for introverts in the world. So a very warm welcome to you, Jen. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hi, Gracie. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. So let's go ahead and get started with some questions that our community has been dying to ask you. So as an introvert who very much enjoys living a boring life, what is your experience of all the human interactions involved in running your Introvert Dear website and then adding to your plate writing books, which comes with a whole team of people and more meetings and more emails and more deadlines? So what is your experience of this, and how do you structure things so that you take good care of your sensitive needs?
That's a really good question. And you and I were talking about this before we started this program. And I actually started my blog and ran it anonymously for 2 years. And since then, I have been slowly working my way up to being more in the spotlight. And I was telling you earlier today, or earlier before we did this, that it's really only been this last year that I've put myself in the spotlight more since my book Sensitive came out. But thankfully, being a writer is fairly solitary, which is nice. I get to work from home, and a lot of my meetings take place like this over Zoom. A lot of correspondence happens over email. To be honest, if this were pre-internet days, I'm not sure I could do what I'm doing, because, you know, that would mean a lot more face-to-face interaction. And as an introvert and a sensitive person, that would get pretty draining pretty fast. So yeah. I would say the busiest I've been is since my book Sensitive came out. There's been lots of various interviews, and I used to feel really nervous about having to do those sorts of things, but I've I've gotten used to it, but it's still something that is an energy drain. So I find I just have to schedule more pockets of alone time and downtime, and just expect less from myself on those days or those weeks where there's a lot of interviews going on.
Mm-hmm. I love that piece of self-compassion in there that you're bringing, because that is so, so important.
I try.
So when did writing on the lives of introverts and highly sensitive people become your primary professional mission? Like, tell us more about how your fascination with these topics fuels your why, in why do you do this type of work?
Sure. So I've been writing about introverts and highly sensitive people for about a decade. I first came across research about being a highly sensitive person, quite a long time ago at this point. I came across Dr. Elaine Aron's research. And I remember reading it and just feeling like it was really life-changing and empowering for me, because it explained things about myself that I had never understood before. And it explained things I'd struggled with. And I think most importantly, it explained that I wasn't alone, right? There were other highly sensitive people out there in the world like me. So I remember thinking that if other people had this information, I think it would be life-changing to them too. So I set about to write about both introverts and highly sensitive people on my blog. And it really just started out as a passion project. I wasn't planning to make this career out of it. I really just was excited to share information with people. And my goal was to make it accessible and to make it easy and even fun to engage with, because I wanted the information to be out there for people in an easy to understand way. So here I am. It's been about 10 years. I didn't expect to be doing this, but I love it. And I'm so glad I get to do it every day.
So wonderful. I'm so glad that you have had this journey and that you've come out from under the rock of, you know, trying to hide in anonymity in those first days of your blog, because the information that you've shared has undoubtedly touched the lives of many, many people. And I have to admit that when I was first learning about introversion, like really digging deeply into it, I stumbled upon your website and I read something there about Julie B. Elland and her work, and I heard mention of this trait of sensory processing sensitivity. And I think that may have been the first time that I had learned that it was actually a trait that was related to all of these emotional and behavioral components, in addition to just the physical sensory issues. And so it's because of your website and your work that I found Julie B. Elland's work. And then I just landed in her community and listening to her podcast, and boy, was it life-changing. You know, just like you talking about reading Elaine Aron's book, when I first discovered the trait and learned what it was and learned that I had it, so much made sense. And I was able to reframe so much of my history. And that's the one thing that I keep hearing over and over from other sensitives who've joined our community, that, you know, they've just learned about the trait and like, oh my gosh, these light bulbs are going off. And, you know, they're learning that they're not alone. There's so many of us out there. And it used to be, they thought it was 15 to 20% of the population. And now we're learning it can be as much as about a third of the population is sensitive. And yet all of us, in some way or another, have probably been encouraged at some point to hide that sensitivity and to pretend like, you know, we're fitting in like all the other go, 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 do, do, do people. So thank you so much for bringing this work to the forefront and putting a spotlight on it and sharing that with so many people.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know that was how you came into Julie B. Elland's community. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah. So getting back to your book, I know a good portion of the book is devoted to sensitive children, to identifying and raising and educating them. In Julie B. Elland's sensitive empowerment community, we regularly see conversations that are initiated by members who are contemplating their decision on whether or not to have kids. And if so, they're wondering, you know, how many should I have? You know, some may have grown up with dreams of having large families, but then realizing their sensitive needs, they're like, can I do this? So what insights do you have that you think may be really important for these people to be considering when they're looking at making this significant life decision? And what words of wisdom could you share with HSP parents who already have young children, and maybe they're finding it challenging to manage all the demands of caring for others and still being able to care for themselves? Oh, let's get you unmuted, Jen.
Sorry about that. I muted myself to clear my throat because I'm dealing with some allergies, but it looks like if I mute myself, I can't unmute myself. So apologies to everyone if you hear me with my allergies.
No worries.
So that's a great question. So I'll answer the first part of your question about what to think about if you're a sensitive person and you're having kids. I'll tackle that one first. I have a 2-year-old son. I believe he's a highly sensitive person. He's a very perceptive and intelligent person. He also gets very rattled easily by things in his environment, like noises, a motorcycle, a siren, construction sounds. And it's really interesting to me to see him have those reactions to those sounds, especially when he's around other kids his age and the other kids don't have those reactions, right? So it's just, it's interesting to me to see those differences in him. So I was pregnant with him and had him as a newborn during the pandemic. So that was a quite a challenging experience, to be honest, because we were nervous about my health, being pregnant. We were nervous about his health as a newborn. And then there wasn't a lot of support that I could have during that time because it was all in that time when people were very much in lockdown, you know, not going anywhere, staying in their homes. So, there was just not a lot of support available to me at that time. So I would say the first thing to consider if you are considering having children is, especially in those first few years when those kids are very young and they need you almost constantly, I would say it's very important to think about what your support network would be, whether that's your spouse or a partner or other family members, or even, you know, a babysitter or a daycare or whatever that might be. I think for sensitive people, you know, it's those early years as a parent are challenging for anyone. But I think if you're a sensitive person, they can be extra challenging because you're not sleeping much. There's a constant demand on your attention, and it's very hard to just walk away and have some downtime. So I would ask, you know, what level of support can I get from other people? Because you can't do it on your own. You can't do it even just with, I would say, you know, your spouse or your partner. You definitely need some more support, especially as a sensitive person. If you are already a parent, I get that. I don't have a perfect answer to this either, because there are days when I'm ready to just, you know, blow my lid because I haven't had a break. My son is getting to that age where he has decided he doesn't want to take an afternoon nap or go to bed at his bedtime. So, you know, that was usually like a point for me to have downtime in my day, but you know, I'm losing that now. So that's been an adjustment for me. So if you are a parent and you're a sensitive person, I would say, keep in mind, you do need that downtime. You do need to have, to be able to step away from your children and do some self-care, whatever that might look like. And of course, it's going to be different depending on your child's age, but again, see where you can get some support from somewhere else. See where you can carve out little pockets of downtime or time to decompress, because we need that, right? We need that as sensitive people. And it's okay to find ways to take that time. For me, it means, okay, if my son is going to watch something on Netflix, which allows me to cook dinner, you know, peacefully without interruptions from him, then so be it. He can have some screen time because it gives me a moment of sanity and downtime and focus. I think it's just important to be able to look for those little pockets of time, because you absolutely need to take care of yourself as a sensitive parent.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I can't even imagine how difficult that must have been during the days of the lockdown when we weren't able to reach out.
It was really hard. Yeah, it was really hard. It's not how I would have, not how I envisioned becoming a parent during a pandemic, but, you know, it is what it is. And I learned a lot from that time.
And I also love the element of self-compassion that you brought in yet again, right there at the end of what you just shared. You know, so many of us, especially HSPs, have a tendency towards perfectionism. And so as a new parent, like you want to do everything right. You don't want to,
yes,
you know, make all the mistakes that you've heard about or that were made on you or, mm-hmm, or whatever. And, you know, you hear the topic of screen time and how kids are getting too much of that. And yet, you know, if it comes down to that's the only support you have in that moment, and it comes down to you getting a little pocket of downtime where you can cook dinner in peace, then yeah, it's okay to let that little one have some screen time. You know, it's for everyone's sanity, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think being a parent as a sensitive person is, it's a lot of balancing what you need and what your child needs and, you know, and finding healthy ways to do that. And knowing that when you get that downtime for yourself, then it allows you to show up as a parent, better as a parent for your child.
Absolutely. Yes. So another thing that I've seen that shows up over and over among the HSPs that I know is how many have a strong desire to help make big changes in the world, to make the world a better place for everyone who's in it. But also for many of these folks, the one big thing that's standing in their way of doing these things and living their dreams is living within their sensitive body's physical, emotional, and energetic limits. So in the book, you talk about three modes of being. You've got threat mode, drive mode, and soothe mode. Can you tell us more about these three different modes, and what would you like to say to those HSPs who have that strong drive mode that's activated by a higher purpose, a higher calling, who also need to have just as strong a soothe mode to balance themselves out and prevent burnout?
Yeah, great question. So in a nutshell, drive mode is our mode that we're in when we are checking things off our to-do list or accomplishing a goal or getting work done. Our threat mode is just like what it sounds. It's your flight or fight response. It's your mode that you go into when you feel threatened or in danger. And of course, this could mean, you know, there's a tornado coming in your neighborhood, right? So it could be an actual physical threat. But a lot of times we step into threat mode when there isn't a real threat to our safety. Maybe the way your spouse says something to you, it feels threatening, even though it isn't. Or when my son has a tantrum, it can put me into threat mode, even though it isn't really a danger to my life. And then soothe mode is that mode that we go into when we want to comfort ourselves and calm ourselves down. It allows us to open up ourselves to connecting with other people. It's where we tap into our empathy and compassion. And, you know, just imagine a mom holding a little baby and rocking that little baby to sleep and saying comforting words. That's what soothe mode is in a nutshell. So when we feel overstimulated as sensitive people, we're often in threat mode. Our bodies feel overwhelmed. We might be experiencing a lot of negative emotions like stress or fear or anxiety. And we've just taken in too much sensory information sometimes. Maybe the room is too loud. Maybe it's too crowded. Maybe the lights are too bright. Maybe the sounds are too loud or whatever it might be. Or maybe there's a deadline looming at work, or maybe we've gotten into an argument with one of our loved ones and we feel overstimulated and overwhelmed. So the key is to move from threat to soothe, which I talk about in my book, but that is learning how to comfort yourself and calm your nervous system so that you don't live in a chronic state of threat mode. Now, like you said, it gets tricky because a lot of us sensitive people have that strong drive mode. We have that strong desire to move toward a goal or, you know, build our careers or do something big in the world. You know, I certainly feel that, right? I have goals and ambitions. And we can go so far into our drive mode that we end up overstimulated and overwhelmed because we're just, you know, racing to check things off our to-do list. I've certainly had days where all I've been doing is racing to check things off my to-do list. And at the end of the day, it's like my mind is just going and so ramped up and my body is so overstimulated that I can't fall asleep, right? I'm exhausted, but I can't fall asleep because my drive mode is just too turned on at that point. So again, I think it comes back to trying to find that balance, and you're never going to get that balance perfectly right. You know, I don't, right? I write about this and teach about this and I don't get it perfectly right. But it's about finding ways to step out of that drive mode and soothe yourself, stepping into that soothe mode. So for example, I've found that I can't keep running all day, checking things off my to-do list, checking my email, doing chores. I can't do that all day long. If I do that right up until the time where I'm going to go to sleep, I'm not going to have enough downtime to wind down and go to sleep. So I have to make myself stop at a certain point and intentionally step out of that drive mode so that my body can calm down and I can step into soothe. So for me, that looks like reading a book or maybe just sitting in my favorite recliner chair in my living room, you know, just kind of thinking or processing the day. Maybe it means getting back to some friends over text message, right? Like connecting with people in my life. But whatever it is that helps you to step out of that go, go, go mode and calm your nervous system down, that's going to help you manage that overstimulation.
And don't you also find that when you are able to give yourself enough of that downtime, the calming and soothing time to regenerate, that you end up actually being more productive and more creative when you do go back to work?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. It's so important to be able to turn your brain off for a little while and let it recharge. Our brains are processing so much information every day, all the time as sensitive people. We are not even aware just how much information we're taking in all the time. Our bodies are aware, right? Our bodies know it and feel it, but it can escape our conscious awareness. So yes, it's very important to give ourselves time to turn off and step into soothe.
So one of the other things that you talk about in your book that I really appreciate is this sensitive boost effect. So what exactly is this, and why should it give reason for hope among HSPs who are struggling to accept or appreciate their sensitive nature?
Great question. So a lot of times when we talk about sensitive people, we focus on the challenges we face, right? Where we are more impacted by trauma or loss or grief. We may more easily experience anxiety or depression because we're taking in so much all the time and we're processing it so deeply. But the flip side of that is we also take in the good things in life more and we process those things more thoroughly. So the sensitive boost effect is this idea that just a little basic support will go a long way for a sensitive person. It will give you even more of a boost than it would a less sensitive person. And when I'm talking about support, I'm talking about just those basic things that we do to take care of ourselves. So maybe it's having downtime at the end of the day. Maybe it's going into therapy. Maybe it's learning a new skill or taking a class or just connecting with someone in a really positive and secure and healthy way. All those things that we do to care for ourselves and to better ourselves are going to make us go further because, you know, again, our brains are designed to just suck out every last drop from something, right? Whether it's a good experience or a bad experience. So we can use that to our advantage as sensitive people, because our brains and our bodies are just going to soak up all the good and all the self-growth and all the self-improvement from positive things.
I just think that is a wonderful aspect of our trait.
Yes, it's amazing. It really is.
I mean, it really brings to mind the image of me as a child when I used to watch the superhero shows. And I had this crib sheet, you know, from a baby crib. I had that on my back as a cape, you know, and I would run around and, you know, pretend like I was this superhero with the bionics, the super strength and the hearing.
Oh,
it's
so cute.
Vision.
Yes, yes.
And who knew that truly, like in reality, this does give us a sort of superpower of a kind.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sensitive people don't have super hearing or like laser eyes, right? Or we're not flying around, but our sensitivity is such an incredible superpower, because it helps us do more with everything that comes our way.
So we're coming up on the end of our conversation here. I want to open up to questions from our live audience. So if you'll just give me a moment here, I'm going to take some time to read through the chat and look for the questions here. And then we'll see if we can answer some things that are on the minds of the folks who are here listening. All right. So if anyone has any questions, if there's anything that we haven't touched on, please send those over. In the meantime, let me ask you another question, Jen. In the book, you end the book actually with talking about the sensitive revolution and how awareness of this trait is starting to crack the light of day. It's starting to be talked about more in mainstream media, and not quite as many people raise an eyebrow when you first hear about it. So in this sensitive revolution, if this revolution had successfully concluded and the world completely acknowledged and embraced the gifts that are brought by high sensitive people, describe your vision of what you think such a world would look like.
Oh, that's great. I get to imagine a perfect world for sensitive people, right?
Exactly.
Well, first of all, I hope that sensitivity becomes something that is so normal and everyday to talk about. I remember when I first started writing about introversion, people had no idea what that was, or very few people knew about it. And this is quite a few years ago. And, you know, now you can sit down, and I remember working on my blog one day a few years ago, and I was sitting in a cafe, and at the table next to me, there were two friends talking, and one of them said, "Yeah, I'm kind of an introvert, so sometimes I don't always respond to my text messages right away." And I just thought, wow, 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been a conversation that was happening. We wouldn't be able to just so easily say, yeah, I'm an introvert. So I hope the same thing can happen for sensitivity. I hope it becomes really normal to just say, I'm a sensitive person. Here's what I need, or here's what I feel, or here's what I experience. And I hope that my book and the work that I'm doing can contribute to that. Okay, so a world for sensitive people, this sensitive revolution. Well, I think that would look like schools having curriculum to teach about sensitivity and other related personality traits. I think it would help students identify if they're a highly sensitive person. And I think students would learn how to really harness the strengths of their sensitivity and then also deal with those challenges that they face. I think workplaces would make more accommodations for sensitive people. Right. So maybe there would be environments that would be more physically calm or physically soothing. Maybe you know, getting rid of those bright overhead lights or those open offices or just, you know, that expectation that you need to chat and socialize and be on all the time. Maybe it looks like giving people the option to work from home more often or work in a different space other than an office or wherever they are working. And, you know, I think the sensitive revolution puts the emphasis on our mental health and our emotions. It helps us to really value and honor emotional intelligence. And it helps us all step into a more healthy mindset. I think sensitive people are not alone in wanting to value emotions and mental health, but I think when we're in some sort of toxic environment or toxic relationship, I think sensitive people feel that sooner and they feel that deeper. So I think we sensitive people benefit when there are, when there's good mental health and when there's strong, healthy relationships. And I think we sensitive people can be leaders in a way to help bring that to our workplaces or our relationships.
And I would love to even see world leaders who are highly sensitive get into positions of power where they can lead large groups of people and societies in ways that honor different needs, you know, not just for highly sensitive people, but help everyone like recognize that we all have like really important gifts and strengths to offer to the world, and that it's worth taking a step back and being curious and getting to know what each of us, you know, has to bring to the table in terms of solving problems and, you know, cooperating and collaborating better. So yeah, I think if we had people who are less focused on power and authority and amassing wealth, but we had people who are more focused on compassionately including everyone and doing things to make everyone's lives better, I could just see HSPs being at the forefront of such an occurrence.
Absolutely. I would love to see more sensitive people step up as leaders. I think as sensitive people, we don't give ourselves enough credit in that department. I think we make some of the best leaders because of our empathy and because we can see other people's viewpoints. And often sensitive people are not the ones who are craving that power and authority, right? They're stepping up as leaders because they have a vision or they want to see some change happen. And yeah, I would love to see sensitive people rise up and have the confidence to step into leadership, whatever that might look like.
Yeah. So we do have a question from the community here. James is asking if you could share any methods of moving from threat to soothe mode.
Yes, that's a great question. So one of them I shared already, which is to just give yourself downtime. I think downtime is really important to protect us because it helps us to not get overstimulated in the first place as easily. And then it can also help us process our emotions and our experiences before we tip over into that full-blown threat mode or that full-blown overstimulation. Think of it as sort of padding out your day with little pockets or a little buffer to help your brain and your body process and calm down and do what it needs to do. I think there are a lot of things that work for different people, and you know, everyone kind of has their favorite self-care technique. I think any kind of deep breathing can be helpful when you're in that moment of overstimulation or threat mode. And I know, right, breathing, we all talk about breathing, but it really does work. Give it a try. And the important thing is to make that breath out longer than the breath in. I think you can also do things like, you know, there's kind of some unique advice that I share in my book. So When you're feeling overstimulated or in threat mode, you can look around you in your environment and start to tune into your senses. So maybe you notice some things that you're hearing. Maybe you hear some birds tweeting. Maybe you hear some cars going by. Maybe you hear some children playing. Or you look around it and name what you can see. You see a green tree. You see a red car. You see, you know, a person walking their dog. Ask yourself what you smell. Ask yourself what you feel physically. Anything that can get you back into your body and get you back into your senses and sort of take you out of your mind, because a lot of times that our minds start to overthink and we start to feel anxious. So if we can step into our body and sort of step out of those anxious thoughts, that's going to help us step into soothe mode. There's some interesting advice. I talked to a woman who works with people who have sensory processing difficulties, and she talks about how visual information and sound go straight to our brain's threat center. So speaking of visual information, she says, if you're in a room, place yourself so that you can see everything in front of you. So maybe, you know, I mean, with your back to the wall, right? So if you're in a restaurant, place your back to the wall, or choose that seat in the meeting where you're up against a wall. And this is kind of silly, but it automatically tells our brain, you're safe behind you. No predator can sneak up behind you, right? A tiger can't jump out of the bushes behind you because you're safe from behind. So that gives our brain one less thing to attend to. Another thing you can do is just move your head less. And again, this sounds a little silly, but when you're moving your head from side to side or up and down, it elevates all of the sensory information. It activates it and sort of, you know, makes it more intense in your mind. So if you can just, you know, stay in one position and not have to move your head around so much, that can just help your brain lower its stimulation level. So for example, maybe you're cooking dinner, maybe you're a parent of a young child, get everything out of the cupboards at once, put it on the table so that you're not, you know, going back and forth, bending up and down to get things out. Or maybe if you're at a dinner party, it sounds counterintuitive if you're an introvert like me, but seat yourself at the head of the table so that you're not having to turn your head so much to listen to other people or talk to other people, but you can see everyone in front of you and you're turning your head less. So there's a lot of things that you can do. There's more tips in my book if you're curious about that.
Thank you for that, Jen. Wow, what a beautiful and rich conversation we've had here today. I want to thank you so much, Jen, for taking the time to come and hang out with us here in the Sensitive Empowerment community. So please share with us how people can find you and how they can learn more about your work.
Sure. You can find my website, introvertdear.com, D-E-A-R, like you're writing a letter to someone, not like the animal. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter under my name, Jen Graneman. And my book is anywhere books are sold.
Yes. And to connect with me, you can visit vibranthsp.com, or you can come and join our nurturing and supportive community where I'm a moderator and host of the Spiral Up group. You can find us at sensitivecommunity.com. And I look forward to connecting with you there. So thank you again, Jen, for taking the time out to be with us today. We really appreciate you sharing your time and your wisdom with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was such a pleasure.
We appreciate you and all the work that you do. So
thank you. I appreciate you and Julie Bielen and all the work you all are doing as well.
Thanks. So take good care, everyone. And hope to see you again soon. Bye-bye for now.